Welcome to the LSE Events Podcast by the London School of Economics and Political Science. Get ready to hear from some of the most influential international figures in the social sciences.
Okay, good evening, everyone. My name is Professor Chris Alden, and I'm here as the chair of this event. This is another of the innovative events of the LSE Festival of Cruising, which is a play that will talk about issues that are broadly the theme of our festival this week, climate change. We're very pleased to do a reading from Cruising, which is has been written up by Katrina Bennett. We are joined by the actors Davy Roderick and Brooke Brandon. Who will join that? Sorry, Brooke Johnson and Brandon as well. Brandon Smith.
Sanchez.
He said I could make it.
Yeah, I did. That's true. I was willing to accept it.
This is a if I could say just a bit words, a few things about Katrina's work. This is her first play. This is not her first play. Her first play was Choose Your Fighter. It was developed with mentorship from the Barrel Organ Theater and debuted in festivals across the Midlands, and had a sold-out run at Camden's People Theater in 2023. It was underwritten by the Arts Council and Gerwood Arts Studio New Work Fund. Our next play, Consumed, was co-written with Dreamkite Collective and has sold out also at the CPT in 2024. And this particular play is going to debut in the Play Sense for Fringe 2026 and is supported by Soho Theatre's Edinburgh Lab in 2026. And Katrina has an MA from Royal Central School of Speech and Drama and works as a mentor playwright for National Theatre and their New Views program. So after all of that, what we're going to do now is actually get a reading from this particular play. And it will, beyond just saying it's called Cruising, I'll let all of you develop it now. Thanks.
Thank you,
Chris. So as Chris mentioned, we're going to be doing an extract from Cruising today. It's about 45 minutes. So we'll be jumping in about 10 minutes after the start of the play. So I thought I'd give you a little summary of what's happened before this scene. So before this, we've met Sam, who's played by Davy, who is an awkwardly lovable nerd and an unlikely passenger on a cruise ship on which this whole play is set. And Amelia, a boisterous, funny and talented dancer who performs on board the ship and is played by Brooke. And Sam and Amelia spark a connection over some margaritas, bonding as two of the few queer people on board this Mediterranean family cruise, even discovering that they're both in open relationships. Despite not technically being allowed to fraternize with passengers, Amelia spends a fun evening with Sam, drinking, laughing, dancing, and sharing her big dreams of a Broadway transfer. By contrast, Sam is a little more reserved. They're not super keen to share details about their job in sustainable environmental solutions. But the evening's going well. Sam's just invited Amelia back to their cabin when Sam reveals that they're an undercover climate activist researching how to take action against the cruise ship. Amelia is less than impressed by this information. Sam flounders and blurts out that they've actually been imprisoned before for their direct action. It's a definite vibe kill. Amelia tells Sam that her partner had previously been imprisoned for climate activism too. And then Amelia suddenly clocks. She knows who Sam is. Sam is also in a relationship with Amelia's partner, Tony. So Sam and Amelia are both in an open relationship with the same person back home, but they've never met before.
Hi, I'm interrupting this event to tell you about another awesome LSE podcast that we think you'd enjoy. LSE IQ asks social scientists and other experts to answer one intelligent question, like, why do people believe in conspiracy theories? Or, can we afford the super rich? Come check us out. Just search for LSE IQ wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to the event.
thanks to all our actors before they walk away completely. I just want to thank you all again. And Brandon Sanchez and who's it? Oh, sorry. And Dave is going to be here, Roderick. Yes. Okay. This was very powerful. Thank you very much. It was really a wonderful testimonial of the work that you've done. Let me keep moving the chair. This is what they call changing the chairs on the deck, but not the Titanic, though, in this case. So, folks, one of the challenges that this particular play puts to us is a challenge actually for the playwright herself in this case, which is art politics and the degree to which art can be used to communicate big ideas about politics. Wanted to know why you took up that challenge and how before I do that, I should say, I've introduced you, Kamina. This is also Dr. Julia Grillo, who is the head of the Geopolitics and Climate Change Program. She's also an expert on political violence. So this is quite an appropriate play for that reason. So Katrina,
sorry, remind me the question. So why I chose to write about this in the first place?
It's one of the finest of lines to go between dealing with politics and doing so on an activist issue and how to convey that. And you've done it, you've taken particular decisions as to how you would approach that.
Yeah. I mean, it's been challenging, definitely, during the process. I mean, initially, the idea of wanting to write this play, I think, came from a sense of obviously everything happening in the world and doing the things that I think regular people do of going on protests and writing petitions, doing all this. And then there are people who feel that they can take things further and they can take direct action. And I'm a scaredy cat, but I'm very in awe of people who feel that they can do that and are willing to give up their freedom and their safety and put their body on the line. This play then kind of evolved from that idea of wanting to explore what that looks like and the impact of that on individuals and on their relationships. But then at the same time, wanting to balance that, because I think, you know, people know the climate crisis is bad. You know, it's depressing. And I think people run away from fear when they encounter that. And I think there's definitely a lot of political apathy at the moment and people turning away from these big crises that we face. And the idea with this play was, okay, so how do we get people to engage? And we thought, we'll make it a rom-com and we'll kind of Trojan horse these bigger political issues within a framework that feels a bit more comfortable to people, that adds a bit of humor and a bit of lightness, and hopefully means that, yeah, we can bring these issues in, but not bang people on the head with it too much.
No, fair point. I mean, there are, I won't name any other types of forms of this that do come across as preachy and what have you, and this doesn't at all. So I think that's one of the successes as I experienced it. So here, so great job done in that way. Let me ask Julia Grillo, in terms of political violence and the decision to take action, because I know that's very much at the center of your work, and this story really was a story of people making decisions and it kind of ramping, both retreating from the implications of that, and then reengaging, and the iconic figure of Tony in this is someone who braves the brave, right, and really took it to its limits. So.
I agree. You did a very great job, because the confrontational aspect came through very clearly. So the political violence element, political violence, it doesn't necessarily have to be physical violence, but the confrontational aspect, how all these important topics like climate issues, environmental issues that would require cooperation, they actually turn into something for which people fight. People also within the same group, it was interesting to see the arguments between Amelia and Sam regarding how to strategize, what kind of actions they had to do. And actually, this made me think of two things, which are both comments and questions. How difficult it is, you know, raise awareness. How do we do that in a way that is effective? But also, how do we do that in a way that the people involved feel comfortable with? So you were talking about just now how you might not be one of those people going or participating in these activities, but you admire those people doing that. And so also the questions, are these the only activities that can be done in order to raise awareness, in order to bring more people in, more supporters? The whole point of Amelia, she returned to that quite a few times. We need more people. I know people. We need more backup, blah, blah, blah. So the question is, how do we bring more people in? And also the kind of actions we choose, I think kind of decide whether there will be more people joining or more people actually going away.
I think definitely community and like the power of the collective was an important thing I wanted to explore within this. But then also, like, I feel like we're seeing Sam as maybe someone who shouldn't be doing this because this isn't very good for them. And I think, yeah, like obviously direct action isn't the only way to enact change. And definitely doing research for the play. And I read lots of great like political theory stuff about how, you know, it should just be about everyone being able to give what they can and accepting that different people have different levels of privilege and have different things that they are able to offer and give. And the person who might be doing admin behind something is equally as important as someone who might be able to go out and protest or who might be doing the PR or whatever. And about the kind of, you know, the coming together of lots of different people to make things happen.
Can I follow up on that a bit? And the decision to act challenges at every step. You provide the alternative. What are the implications of this? And I think that tension seems to me at the core of the story that you're telling. Does the decision? Do you think you're in portraying each of the characters? Are you giving and their evolution around these things? Were you trying to say there are many options here, or there are many actors there are many choices that we face in terms of our principles or the like, or what were you saying, something else?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely that. I mean, direct action isn't obviously the only way that impact can happen. I think, you know, these characters are going on quite different journeys. Of Amelia's going on this journey from, you know, a bit of a party girl having a nice time to actually engaging with these issues in a way I think she's been too scared to confront before, and realizing that like she does have the skill set and she can use those skills to create hopefully positive change. But I think for Sam, you know, they were formerly an activist and have experienced a lot of trauma from that. And I think for them, they're kind of going on this journey of like, maybe actually this isn't for them and maybe that's okay. And maybe they can, you know, play their role in other aspects. Maybe they can just be there as the emotional support to other people doing that. And, you know, the climate crisis is a huge existential issue. It's not going to be solved by only one form of action or one type of person doing it. I think obviously there's so many different people who can contribute in so many ways. And like, I hope that like as storytellers, we can contribute in some ways and a very different way to how scientists might be contributing or how activists might be contributing. And I think, you know, this is an issue facing the whole of our globe and all of our societies. So everyone can bring their own thing to that and do what they can. But I don't think it's ever helpful to make anyone feel like that there's a pressure to do something that isn't comfortable for them. They should feel empowered to do what they can.
So it's a very ecumenical sort of view. We have a broad church, so to speak, where people can be have a role over at this end of it, but this one on a different end, but the broader purpose is.
Yeah, so.
I don't know if you wanted to.
Yeah, no, actually, just to follow up on this point, because you were rightly saying, try to make people feel like they can contribute according to what they like, their characteristics, what they feel comfortable with. Actually, at the beginning of the of the reading, at some point, Sam and Emilia were fighting on, I think it was about which what to do, but then the conversation was more about, you can do that. No, I can do it. I can do more than this. So then I was wondering, now what is the focus here? What are you guys discussing? Are you trying to think about the tactic, the strategy that can be more effective? Or are you trying to prove each other and yourself so that you can actually do something, I don't know, bigger than, I don't know, than just stopping the ship or just... staining some walls. So I think that is also interesting because it raises questions, right?
Yeah, and I think that also, I guess, comes from the nature of weaving this stuff with a rom-com, and we need some conflict. And, you know, we see, I think, under the surface of a lot of these conversations that it's not actually about planet stuff, it's about the relationships that are going on there and the tensions, and they're using those conversations as a way to have some friction, have some competitiveness in a way that they wouldn't approach as directly as that, you know. Yeah,
that's, for me, the relationships are what makes the difference here. It's a carrier. It carries the story and keeps it from being burdened by the messaging in the preachy sense.
Yeah.
Let me open it up to the audience. Does anyone have a question? I was going to say a burning question, but that sounds a bit carbon. So a question. Here?
Hello.
Could you identify yourself just for the purposes of the...
Hello. Sorry, what do you mean? I don't know.
This looks like a policing. No,
I'm Lydia.
Your name. And if there's anything as relevant as I'm a climate activist on who owns a cruise ship. So.
I'm not a climate activist. I'm part of a Katrina's Theatre Company. And I have a question for Professor Grillo.
Not Professor. Thank you for the title.
It's a technical issue. You were right.
I'm messing this up. my question is, I'd be interested to hear in your opinion, what's the most effective climate action that's ever happened and why?
My opinion on what's the most effective. Mm. Can I be brutally open?
Yeah.
I think there hasn't been one climate action that has been particularly or the most effective. Mm. But also, let me add something. I think these are questions that can be answered in absolute terms. It's context by context. Mm. So it's like in political violence or conflict resolutions, you can't have a model that you then apply like a computer form everywhere. It has to be based on a case by case because each case is specific. You have characteristics that can be shared, but there are differences. Those differences count. So that's why it's a very tricky question because it's true we want to think about which approach can be the best one, but it's also true that you never really know until you are in that situation, so you have a better idea of what's going on, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm going to be naive and be drawn into the trick of your question, but and say that one that had direct relevance and action was one from quite some time ago, which is the chlorofluorocarbons, yes, of this hydrocarbons in the air. It was the hole in the ozone, and there was action taken after a summit in, I think, Montreal, and that became a point of departure for government action. Critical to this, if you dig into the story, It was of a very different U.S. government and a different period of time. But it happened that one or two of the key cabinet officials really thought this was an issue. And I think what it speaks to is the idea of the champion, you know, somebody who has to be the one that drives this particular agenda, wants to bring it to the foreground of decisions and actions. And it was in that particular context that a coalition of forces came together and government signed up to it. And we actually have had a big reduction in those, and it was, of course, things that we daily use, which are, you know, spray cans of various kinds and refrigeration and like, so, and it was also good because it could be tackled. I think that some things are a little more amorphous and require a cooperation that is, if it is not, climate change has both visible, but it's not a, here's a spray can and we can solve, you know, or change the refrigerating, the compound of materials in it. It's something can be seen as more amorphous.
I can add actually something, maybe one thing to, it's not necessarily a particular action, but something that activists or everyone should think about is what is that can draw people closer to the cause or to support the cause, and what is that drives people farther away. Italy was quite at the center of this, so I'm going to just keep going with that case. A couple of years ago, there were a lot of climate actions activities, and some of these, most of them, basically consisted of stopping the traffic. Now, Italians got very angry at these people. And not because Italians don't care about environmental policies. In the South, you have a lot of problems with the droughts. So we are very, very well aware, or the floods in the North or Central Italy. So Italians are very aware of the environmental issues, but Italians are also working people. So, or people that have to go to the hospital because they're sick. So I think more than what kind of model can we use is mostly about, is this action something that will draw people closer to what to our cause, or are we actually going to harm somebody with this? This is actually something to think about, because climate, environmental issues is about trying to fix what's not going very well with the climate. And that damages human life, nature, etc. So I think that's the approach, or that would be my approach.
Was someone over here?
Hi, I'm Cassie Jo. I work in sustainability and climate storytelling in film. I really love this. It's beautiful, the Trojan horsing into a rom-com strategy. Have you thought of, or are you already adapting this for a film?
Not currently, but I mean, if you're offering. No, so the journey of the play at the moment, so we're going to the Edinburgh Fringe for all of August, which we're very excited about. So we've got some London previews in July. We'll take it to the Fringe, and it'll be a nice chance to see how it lands with more international audiences. And hopefully it will have a future life from there. We'll see. It would just be great to, yeah, have lots of people come see the show, probably get some feedback as well. I'm sure it will keep evolving and developing. But I think it could be a really fun film, you know? We love a rom-com. And yeah, especially in a film format, I can see, a very cool, campy version of this on screen that I think would be great. So maybe one day.
Hi, I'm Dom. I'm in sustainability education in another London university. I'm going to kind of take the other side of the binary of your first question and go for the stories. Climate is such a big subject that it's really hard to tell a story about it. And there are kind of a few examples. You've got like Don't Look Up, the movie, where you know, an asteroid was coming and it was a parable. You've got a Danish TV series from a couple of years ago where they were evacuating the country because of rising sea levels. Kim Stanley Robinson's novel, The Ministry for the Future. But there don't seem to be many big stories. You know, what are the best climate stories in any media, if any? And if not, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard. I think it's definitely, to speak specifically about the theatre space, I think there definitely is a lot of great work being made at the moment about the climate and to great success. I mean, Kyoto, which was on at the RSC and then transferred to the West End and then went to the US, was very successful at the Fringe last year, you know, Hot Mess, this climate musical about humanity and the earth dating. And I think there are lots of people who want to explore these issues through stories, and I think there's definitely an appetite for it. I mean, there's this great organization who did the Indigo Green Impact Report, and they did research into what cultural audiences think and feel about the climate, and they discovered that there was 92% of cultural audiences in the UK have changed their lifestyles because of concerns about the climate, and that more than half of UK cultural audiences want to see the climate crisis reflected in the artistic programming, not just of theatres, but of other arts institutions. And so I think there is a desire for it because I think people recognise that it is, you know, such a huge part of our life and it's, you know, dominating so much of our society. But I think it's really hard to do. I mean, I found writing the script really hard. I'm sure there are still lots of things that could be better about the script because I think it can be really bleak and, you know, people often don't want to watch that kind of stuff. So I think it's about exploring what are the good stories and what are the good characters and how do we intertwine climate issues with those journeys, which hopefully this does because it's about the climate crisis, but it's also about like their romantic journey and their relationship with Tony. And it's, yeah, it's how do we weave those things together and make it relatable and make people want to engage with it rather than being put off because it just feels bleak. So yeah, I think it's hard, but I think there's lots of people trying to do it, and I think probably just going to see more and more of it, hopefully, over the next few years.
One of the oldest novels of this kind, of a novel, actually, work of fiction, is, let's say his name incorrectly, I think it's Edward Abbey or Edward Albee. He wrote something called The Monkey Wrench Gang. It was all about, it was very contrary to what at the time, it was very new, contrary. It's just a bunch of people, really pretty much rough and tumble people that decided to do something about the environment. And they just wrecked things in the major initial disruptors in that. It seems to me that there are stories that are out there that we may not, they're not, that wasn't a climate one, it was an environmental one. I think there are ways to tell this that as you demonstrated, that, you know, draw us in and don't just paint all the dark colors that will then say it's the end of the world and, you know, from there. So I think that that's it's important in telling a full story.
Thank you. I have a question, probably is from a similar vein. So there is a saying in playwriting world that actually every story is a climate change story. I wonder to what extent you would agree or disagree with that. And also how this, why did you touched on that a little bit before, but like how did this story, this specific narrative come to you? Why did you choose this narrative, this angle? Thank you.
So to address the first question, I don't think every play is about the climate. I would say that every play is political because I think the personal and the political are just so deeply intertwined. I don't see how we can disconnect them because all of the power structures about how we relate to people and relate to the world is embedded in the politics of society. I guess increasingly as the world develops and change, maybe the climate will become an unavoidable part of
theatre, and I guess you could also say within theatre making practice, there's also always going to be a climate element as we think about like how we create work sustainably. I can definitely see that increasing more in the future. And then your second point, yeah. So as I was saying earlier, I think, you know, it started from this wanting to explore a bit more about what it means for individuals who are involved in civil disobedience. And actually, I listened to a podcast series Navarra Media did called Committed that was about climate activists. And there was one episode on it which talked about the impact on the loved ones of climate activists. And I just found that really interesting of like, yeah, what does it mean if these people you love in your life are choosing to, you know, give up potentially their freedom in, you know, because of the climate, but that also might mean they're separated from you and the impact of that on relationships with loved ones. And so I wanted to explore a bit more of that. And then also there's no budget in theatre. So I was like, okay, so it probably should be a two-hander because we can't really afford to pay many people. And so then I was like, okay, what kind of environment would be fun? And, you know, why is it a two-hander? And I was talking to my partner about it and they suggested, hey, how about a cruise ship? That's fun. And so, yeah, then started to unpack the idea of what does it mean for this relationship if they're in this very intense claustrophobic environment, and then also going on a bit of a deep dive of finding out actually how terrible cruise ships are, and then all those themes kind of winding together to make the play as it is now.
Thank you. This is a question mainly for Julia. I was kind of thinking about this play, which is so much about actions, and thinking about the last period of sort of sustained, like, significant climate action, which sort of came about in the 90s, and how that sort of escalated into sort of vandalism and arson and violence. And I was wondering if you think that there's a chance of the current era of climate action sort of escalating to a similar place of vandalism and potentially assassination?
Hopefully not. No, okay, let's be honest. There can be. The risk is there. I said at the beginning that something that came through this play was the confrontational element, not like between the members of the same group, but also the confrontational approach between the activists and whatever was outside their group, right? So I think that if I had to compare, I did some research on radicalization and political violence during the Cold War. And if I also remember, but this is from my memory of when I was a kid, some climate activist groups doing some, they actually were acting a bit more violently than you would expect, with sabotaging bombs, for example. But the point here is, whenever you have the confrontational approach, the risk of this escalating into more violence, more physical violence, direct violence is there. And so I think that, and this is why I said it's probably about thinking how drawing people towards your cause, because people might not necessarily disagree with you. Again, this comes from my research, not necessarily with environmental policy, more broadly, okay? People may not necessarily disagree with what you think, with your ideas, with the cause. They might just disagree with the way that the way the objectives are pursued, because that affects something else in their lives. So it's a bit more complex. No, I don't think it's difficult. It's just a bit more complex. There are different layers here. But this is why I said it's mostly about how. And try probably to avoid the confrontational approach, which is normally what, even if you think about yourselves, again, outside of the environmental aspect, if your classmates, your colleagues approach you in a confrontational way, then you instinctively go on a defensive mode. That basically is the seed for it to escalate and become a more violent confrontation. So that is that is what we want to avoid, I think. I don't know if I answered your question.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Thank you.
Can I take a somewhat different view, and please don't feel defensive and attack. is it political violence? So I do work on revolution, liberation movements and those sort of things. Political violence, sometimes retrospectively, people will say it was necessary to do that to get change, that it was, you know, terrible for some caught up in it or what have you. So I don't, you know, it's not it's another side of the coin, perhaps. Yes.
Yeah. Shall I leave it at that or shall I add?
Escalate.
No, we can leave it at that.
Trina, can I ask another? If there are no other questions out in the audience, can I ask you a bit the choice? I had thought that the cruise ship was sort of the metaphor for all of us together in this particular dilemma, which is in oceanic proportions all around us, and that we can't get off of it, and we have to face it. In we can't escape in some way. We're all facing the consequences. The other way that these climate change story is told is told through, I think, dystopia. And it seems to me we have a profound amount of dystopian science fiction-y dystopian futures playing out, and they always hold some sort of the end of the world, and it's usually directed at young people. It's usually, and kids and they're from teenage and upward, and for them, they are drawn into this negative. I feel sad for them because they're drawn into a fictional account of the world that hasn't happened, and it's disabling. It like takes them, makes them feel like the tools are taken away from us. So what I liked about yours is A, it wasn't dystopia. Cruise ship is, but also it was about action throughout. It was always on the spectrum of what it would be to act. You know, do we do it this way? Would it produce that, or shall we not, and the like? And that seemed to me a very different kind of way to approach this. So I don't know if I'm making a question out of this, but
yeah,
asking for comment.
Yeah, I mean, it was an intentional choice, I think, you know, going back to what I was saying earlier about that audience, research about cultural audiences in the UK, another one of the findings was that people want solutions in work that engages with a climate crisis. They don't want a dystopian, this is it, this is the end. They want to see that there is hope and there is potential. And I think, yeah, especially for younger generations, like, it, you know, it does look a bit bleak, but I think I wanted to drive this feeling through it that all isn't lost and there is something that can be found in community and in connection with people, and yeah, that there are things that people can do. But yeah, I don't know why so much is dystopian. I don't know, maybe it's like doom scrolling, I guess. People kind of, there's something, I suppose, about going into that spiral and kind of indulging in it, but don't think it's often that helpful. And I remember listening to a podcast with Caroline Lucas, and she was talking about how politics has failed in so many ways to address the climate crisis, and maybe there's something about what storytelling can do instead. And yeah, I'm not saying that this will have changed the world in any way, but I think there's something about being hopeful and how if you can get audiences to leave feeling maybe slightly better about things and slightly empowered, then that's a nice thing to be able to do.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. If they're not, okay. That's right.
Hi, just to add on to that, the Sustainable Entertainment Alliance, so not on the theater side, but on the film and TV side, have just released a green titles database. And it's across dystopia, but also comedy and other genres. So you can find climate stories that are more hopeful and optimistic. And there are, I'm not really sure, do you know what the resources are in the theater space for climate storytelling? But there definitely are quite a few growing initiatives, development funds, climate consultants for putting in more hopeful stories in film and TV. So is there an equivalent in the theater space?
Not that I can name off the top of my head, but I know that there are theatre productions that have tried to build that within the production itself. So like Kyoto, which I mentioned earlier, I know they had a whole thing of all, you know, QR codes that were given out to all the audience members that they could scan that would take them to resources of like, okay, so you've seen this and it's impacted you in a way. And now here are some things you can actually do. So I think that, yeah, that way of carrying it forward and sharing resources is great. But also that database sounds amazing. So we'll definitely be checking that out.
Can I ask, actually, put our actors on the spot again and ask them to, in the role that you've been occupying while doing the readings, how did you feel? How did you experience the change, the tensions around action versus inaction, or the climate change, and it's against the background of climate change?
On me first, okay. I mean, I'm not really an anxious person day to day, so it's horrible to be put into the headspace of someone who is really struggling with just kind of basic communications to other people, let alone dealing with the climate crisis. And I think, yeah, it's interesting because I think we all have these moments of like, obviously reading the news and you spiral for however long and then you go about your day. And so to really be in the headspace of someone where their whole life and their whole relationship has been affected, you know, permanently, I mean, it's just an extension of empathy, I guess, which is a good thing, I would say.
Yeah, I'm filling in for Claire, who'll perform it at the Fringe. So I'm not as sort of immersed in it. But I was immediately struck when I first read it by how relieved I was by the happy ending. I think that sometimes writers can think to be like, you know, sort of serious or realistic or taken seriously, I suppose, then it has to be like a really murky, unclear sort of sense of you know, leave it up to the audience to decide and whatever. And I think it's braver and cooler to, especially with something like this, to give it like a true rom-com happy ending like that. I thought that was I left the reading like, you know, interested and feeling sort of lighter about the possibilities and the hope of it and whatever. And I think that's I think it's so brilliant of you to combine this genre with this subject matter. And what I like about both characters is that they are like playful and flirty, and they're not like just bogged down in this thing and this concept. They're able to coexist with it and still find joy and connection. And I think that message alone is so valuable and makes these characters really gorgeous and interesting, because I think other climate things I've seen can be, yeah, overly serious and like almost like they're scolding you, and as you've all put so much better, there's very little a person can get out of that.
My performance was also an extension of empathy. we all know what Captain, and I just tapped into that. It's such a brilliant, fun way of making an antagonist out of this issue, and it was a fun time.
I think if there aren't any other questions, it really remains to me to thank all of you for joining on this. And of course, thank Katrina and all our actors, and Julia Rilo as well, contributing. It's a real pleasure and eye-opener. I'm looking forward to seeing this in full when it's on stage.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. You can subscribe to the LSE Events podcast on your favorite podcast app and help other listeners discover us by leaving a review. Visit lse.ac.uk/events to find out what's on next. We hope you join us at another LSE event soon.